You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with David Smalling. David, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here, Brainerd. Thank you for having me.
David, we're going to talk about your show, of course, at Templon, and I'm really excited to talk about this. Beautiful, beautiful show. So to begin with, I guess let's just step back and looking at the whole show, how is this different from your last show? What are some of the themes you're exploring now that are new for you or evolving in an ongoing tradition?
Yeah, fun question. So my last show, which was at Palo Gallery here in New York, was really focused on my life as a high schooler, actually. My life sort of pre-coming to the United States. So I, for context, was born in Kingston, Jamaica. And I think that matters a lot to the way that I see myself, that I see images, class, performance, and social spaces. And I mean, a lot of my work doesn't really kind of, you know, it isn't really designed to sort of tell kind of a grand lesson in as much as they are sort of vignettes from my own life. But to answer your question, the previous show kind of focused on, I mean, there were portraits for one. So that was one sort of very concrete distinction. Whereas in contrast, a lot of the imagery in this current show at Templon can be interpreted as still lights. Although I see them as a bit more than that. They're sort of these stages. But the previous show, it was titled Wood and Water. The current one, Elizabethan Color, sort of dissect different eras of my life. Wood and Water, the previous show, looked at women in my life growing up, my high school teacher, my mother, you know, cultural icons in Jamaica, and their effect on me. And so the way that show, that body of work kind of came together was there was sort of one image for each parish in Jamaica, broadly speaking. So that's sort of one of the bigger differences. Whereas this show, this show looks less at my time, my life, you know, sort of pre-college, which was when I was in Jamaica. I came here for undergrad to the U.S., but looks at my 20s, right? It sort of thinks about these vignettes and moments in my life in my 20s, but and sort of very disjoint in sort of my headspace and the themes and sort of the mood of the show in many ways.
So, I want to get into that, the mood of the show, to talk a little bit about your background. Besides going to the School of Art and a PhD from Harvard, you also studied mathematics. So you're a polymath, right? We're talking about your art as an artist, but there's a lot of things that are informing this intellectually, right? I mean, I'm not saying that we're going to talk about all of those today, but that's powerful. You're drawing on a variety of bodies of knowledge, or are you? How do those bodies of knowledge, your PhD and mathematics, inform your art?
My practice, the way when I think about capital A art, as they'd say, and sort of how I spend my time in the studio, but by and large, I think about imagery and drawing in a space that is very much devoid of systems or math or structure. So I do a lot of works on paper to plan compositions and to just sort of as a diagnostic instrument for kind of thinking about how I'm feeling, what I'm trying to say in a composition, what a composition could be, kind of ideating. A lot of that happens in works on paper and sometimes on a tablet. I mean, my actual process feels very hybrid, and for people who, you know, kind of know my academic background, if they're kind of like a fly on the wall or even visiting the studio and actually see my practice, it feels not haphazard, but like quite like not like remarkably unsystematic, because I will often draw on sort of like a letter size printer paper, nothing fancy to start with, and take a photo of that and blow that onto my iPad. But it's, oftentimes the light is weird and it's kind of all over the place. And so when I'm sort of conceptualizing a new image, I will sort of kind of meander in this way that where there isn't much of a system, to so to speak. Now, when I go to actually execute a painting, there's a lot more structure and system to it that I've kind of built over the years and designed in how I actually go about making a painting, how I think about glazes and underpaintings and so forth. That is educated by mathematics and more physics, you could say, than math. There are ways of thinking about how pigments mix and pigment colors and light that I look at through a fairly scientific lens. Which is sort of, very much enmeshed in the physicality, the materiality of the specific pigments I'm using and so forth. And so that the point of execution on a panel or on a canvas where I'm sort of engaging with the materials becomes a bit more scientific at that point, and there is some influence of that side of my background. But where imagery is concerned, it's very much, I don't usually paint from photos. I mean, occasionally I'll start with a reference that's some little screenshot that I took on my iPhone in front of Party City or on the street corner or something. But usually it's from imagination, and the imagery is largely made up or drawn from historical references to some extent as well. But a lot of that sort of sort of figuring all that out and kind of getting my act together is generally like very, very free, and there's not much math or science or systematic thinking at that point.
So now this show is, of course, something different that's guiding this, right? This is a series of you saying that's about something else. And a lot of these do look, as has been written about, somewhat ceremonial. So let's talk about some of these because, yeah, they're beautiful paintings, but also quite enigmatic in a lot of ways. To start with, Party Favor. Party Favor is, I really like all of these, but Party Favor has some elements that have been in others here. And it's, tell me a little bit about this. The mattress figures in quite a bit here in Supplemental Course and in several paintings here. So if this isn't a still life, what is this exactly?
Right. Yeah. It's that's a great question. I mean, it's that. Well, the mattress is a reimagining of the interior. Interiority and interior paintings have sort of lived as a genre unto their own in some ways throughout our history. And I see the mattress as this sort of really canonical kind of modern day contemporary icon of the interior and the domestic. It's sort of grungy in many ways. It's personal, almost like a toothbrush, but it's also kind of seductive. It's both low. I mean, you could have an inflatable mattress or even a beautiful mattress, but on the floor, and that's a bit more lowbrow and déclassé. And then you could have sort of a Louis XIV mattress in a beautiful sort of ornate frame that's seen as sort of that very highbrow. It's seductive. It's sexual. It's pulling you in. It's almost a little bit dangerous. And so I see the mattress is the stage for kind of thinking about my own life as a man in my 20s, having come out of school and kind of navigating my own ambitions and living in New York City and kind of figure out who the heck I am in many ways. And it sort of, in my drawings kind of kept coming back as this motif that reminded me of all the mistakes and a lot of the learnings, like positive learnings and moments of cringe or moments of just lessons learned in the past 10, 15 years out of school. And so party favor and a lot of these are kind of, an expression of my own kind of reflection on frailty and on courage for learning and then vulnerability, right? Party favor in particular is this, a lot of these the instruments sort of for me represent are sort of this motif that I identify with, where it's an instrument. It should make a noise. It should communicate a feeling or a mood or a melody, or it should entertain. But sometimes there is no real rule book for what that ceremony should look like, or what the rule book for conduct. There is no Emily Post for many situations. And so that sort of tying up and fumbling out of the orifice where, you expect perfection and rehearsal, but you get kind of something that's raw and in some cases arbitrary and botched.
But it's not
Are
arbitrary, right? These are, I mean, these are
yeah.
enigmatic objects in here, but these are,
Right.
it sounds like very intentional. These, you have a relationship
Yeah.
to all these objects. They touch on
Right.
it, if I'm understanding correctly, times in your life. There's a almost a nostalgia here.
There is a nostalgia. I mean, a lot of these refer to moments, very, in my mind, moments that are sometimes a moment that was, a speech at a birthday party, or a moment in the lives of myself and friends of mine, kind of learning how to show up for other friends that are not like us, maybe in terms of some form of identity, whether it be racial, gender, sexual identity, et cetera. And so they all kind of bring me back to a particular moment.
I like that. And that moment for you, were we to go through one of these in detail, is very
Yeah.
specific. The viewers are making their own, would you say, associations with some of these objects?
Yeah, I mean the viewers make their in some cases make their own associations. I think so for me each one is rather specific. I mean, specificity in some cases is as specific as a breakup or a crush or figuring out that. I mean, I think that the more salient moments than the breakups are usually figuring out that there should be the breakup, right? And those are kind of the memorable kind of quiet learning moments for me at least. And then other moments are more protracted, kind of temporally, right? It's like this the period of the pandemic was, a really interesting one for everyone, right, on a global scale. And there were sort of moments of learning to sort of bridge different views, different groups of communities with different relationships to their level of their risk tolerance around certain measures with respect to the pandemic and so forth. So that was a more, there are many episodes there that were a bit more protracted. And then their episodes are almost a little bit more timeless. I mean, there's one piece, Cream Master, which is a nod to Matthew Barney's Cream Master cycle, which was one of the, I mean, he was one of my idols growing up as an artist, growing up in high school. And that for me, thinking about the Cream Master cycle of videos was sort of like the ultimate exploration of almost heterosexual masculinity at the time. I was like a high schooler. I was like, well, wow, look at this. What's Matthew Barney doing, right? And so there's one
Right.
piece, Cream Master, that kind of thinks about that, from that's which is very interior to me. And then on the other side, there's one called American Bride with two pheasants and a wig on a candelabra in the middle, and that's a little bit more recent, and that's that I contrast that sort of masculine stuckness with sort of this I've been really fascinated by the Bama Rush. I don't know if you have you seen the Bama Rush documentary on the it's a documentary on the University of Alabama, but more broadly the sorority and fraternity system in the South.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, fascinating. And so there, it's sort of, the American bride is kind of looking at these sort of hyper-performative rituals that are rooted in the sort of Southern Greek life and how that sort of shapes identity and imagery in an age of social media, and this sort of algorithmic pursuit of an ideal. So anyway, I'll pause there. I mean,
No, but that
the
relates to the
episodes are
cream
different.
master, the whole cream master idea, right? Also, what are these visions of masculinity or other gender presentations?
Exactly. Yeah, and so that's one of the I found the Bama documentary so fascinating, really, really, and it was quite intimate and nicely done, given the constraints for the sort of thing, like they're young people in college and so forth, and but still, I thought an interesting piece of documentary.
Yeah, that is so interesting. And in supplemental course, of course, this image is a bit different than some of the others we've been discussing. This is a stack of mattresses, right, in a candelabra. It looks almost like a princess and the pea kind of situation. But this is quite different. This seems to really weight those mattresses and have a. I mean, there's a number of different things about this, just in terms of composition, but also the content.
I mean that was a very much a fun painting. And in some ways, yeah, it's I mean there the mode that sort of kind of nods back to a period of loneliness, and the candelabra often comes back in a lot of my drawings and writings as this sort of talisman of feeling lonely, but in some ways feeling, eventually feeling okay with that loneliness. And it's with social media and this sort of the being surrounded by what can oftentimes feel both deep and shallow at the same time. I mean, I think it kind of brushes on parasocial, not just in social media interactions, but also in sort of these more semi-familiar type of relationships where it might be, friends of friends in the same city and so forth that are kind of teetering on the edge of parasocial. Supplemental course is a bit of a meditation on feeling lonely at times in the time of social media, and but kind of being okay, as it's similar but with different very different feelings behind it, but a very similar theme to Queen of Hearts in a sense.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's I like that so much. In terms of this whole set, before I ask you another question, this whole exhibition, which again, listeners have links here, so you can go down and see it, and if you can't see it, to learn more by following the links here and looking at images. As you said, this show has a relationship to social media. Is it also, would you say, a relationship to the moment? We're in a very like kind of fraught political moment, it seems, and there's so many. What would appear to be almost messages in here. I mean, now that you referenced other artists, it seems that there's also more references in here to things that the viewer wouldn't initially pick up. Is right? I mean, there's so
Yeah,
much in
totally.
here, so much content in here that I could really like dig into these for a while. But without trying to make them literal, that's happening. That's happening here too. Is there a political aspect to this? I guess is what I'm asking.
Right. I mean, I think that the biggest political, sort of one sort of aspect of politics that I wanted to express and that sort of came through in the sort of the drawings and the studio practice for this body of work is sort of, a sense of a deep sense of wanting to learn, and wanting to learn how to. On the back of the pandemic, on the back of, I grew up in Jamaica, but on the back of even George Floyd, for, showing up for friends of mine that are African American, that having grown up in the United States as a person of color is a bit different from having grown up in somewhere like Jamaica, or even Africa, right? And so I mention all that just to say that one of the more political themes was just my own feeling of kind of learning on the job, I'll call it, kind of tongue in cheek, around being empathetic and showing up for people that look nothing like me, right? That are from faraway land. And so I think that a friend of mine who is like another black man who but is African American, whereas I'm Jamaican, that's very similar. But I'm thinking close friends of mine that are from the Far East, or one from the Middle East who is trans, and so forth, and a sense in which there was a moment where it felt, for me at least, more anxious in learning. But I want to show up for my community. In the ways that I think my community has shown up for me as well, and has been very empathetic, and I think that I have been very fortunate. And so that's a lot of what I was thinking about very early on in contemplating this body of work when I started to explore the instruments that are sort of tied off. So if you look at a piece like Beaufort, that one, they were by invitation only. Where they're tied off, it's sort of almost yelling out and nothing coming out, or and the nothing coming out is not so much being censored by the outside, but a little bit me, an anxiety of trying to navigate and to learn, and that I think is one of my one of the points of navigation for me over the past 5 years. And I think that it's important to me. And so there's that political aspect. The other is, which is kind of related but a little bit less kind of vague, or like abstract, let me put it like that, is there is some imagery in thinking about in sort of getting to that age where, my partner, she is thinking about freezing her eggs, and I'm thinking about, just at the time, my partner thinking about freezing her eggs, and me thinking about what it would mean to start a family and what the calculus around a decision like that. And then also my female friends, platonic female friends, thinking about making those same similar calculations. And really, it's as crazy as it sounds, but it's the honest goodness truth, the first time it really sinks in and dawns on me that the difference in calculus around like child rearing and reproduction in contemporary life, and sort of navigating that for men and women. And so I had two close friends who I was sort of the person that picked them up when they did their egg freezing. And so I was thinking about that around the time I was, sort of doing a lot of writing. And there's a piece called Follicular in the show, which you can see. Follicular is one. Last of Kin is another similar piece, where I was sort of thinking a lot about the sort of harshness, not of, I mean, I think modern sciences makes a lot easier than, it would otherwise be, but the harsh sort of decisions and how that really changes the way that sort of even sort of gender dynamics. And so that's another part of and also the changing politics around this as well. So that's another sort of dimension, but a lot of it is sort of kind of showing up and you know, learning how to be more empathetic, right? I mean, no one's perfect, and I think that's been a part of my own journey that I wanted to sort of explore in this body of work, and just empathy in general.
Yeah, I'm glad you shared that. That makes a lot of sense, and I appreciate that. I appreciate your time with me today and the show. Of course, I want to ask you one more question, a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
Right now, I just picked up Interviews with Artists. It's a collection of interviews. It was written and published by Gagosian, written by Bill Powers, an art gallerist here in New York. And Bill, some time ago, was kind enough to give me a copy, and I had been quite delinquent on picking this up, and so I just read the interview with John Corin and Richard Phillips. John Corin was another one of my artists that I really liked growing up. Kerry James Marshall as well, but Interviews with Artists. I think it's a really nice, and it spans a fairly wide time frame. So it's kind of interesting to kind of see, you know, this Kara Walker being interviewed 10 plus years ago to more recent interviews, which is kind of interesting.
Well, that is interesting. And well, thanks for that. Yeah, that does sound great. I'd like to read that as well. I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time, David. Wish you well with the show. And again, listeners, please follow the link, see the show if you can, or learn more. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.